CKUW 95.9 FM, Winnipeg.
Welcome to the Meta World Stupaloop Show. I am your host. I am a Karen Elliott. This week on the Meta World Stupaloop Show, a look at looking at Mars. It's not a 50s look of cardboard robots and little green men. It's a more modern sciency look, but of course, with a sprinkling of that other. There is a media learning warning associated with today's show. You may learn something. There's only a couple of these Mars shows for now, but it's potentially a subject that can expand into a much, much larger series. We're inching you towards some of the more out there upcoming space-based shows with a dose of something resembling reality, although certainly also capturing a bit of the culture's imaginary Mars. Output. Art Bell and his Coast to Coast AM show was one of those things that, at the time, could be gag-inducing, but in hindsight was one of those gifts that keeps on giving. Who the hell lives in the desert but is only photographed in a sweater? So much of any unknown is what we project on it, and I wonder if, in 30 years, the current Mars undertaking may seem just as quaint as the Skylab seems now. I wonder how they follow up, a small step for man, a giant leap for mankind. It'll probably be something like, Mars. Yo, on the Meta World Stupaloop Show. On CKUW 95.9 FM, I am your host. I am A. Karen Elliott.
Oh. hear more about that later. So part of Pablo's job also is interpreting the data. So when we get this data back from Mars, we don't know the answer yet. There's a lot of time spent in processing and calibrating and comparing it to libraries and data before we know the answer. So that's a big part of his job too. And I first met Pablo in 2007 when he came to the SETI Institute for a project one summer. And at that time, he was a graduate student in Spain at Valladolid, I think. maybe Pablo will have to pronounce that for us. In any case, he earned his PhD in physics there. And later, I learned that Elena's mom actually comes from Valladolid, which is very cool. So, small world. So if any of you are listening from Spain or from Valladolid, then let us know that as well. So let's have Elena tell us a little bit about her work at Gale Crater to start off. What is the science operations coordinator
between the scientists who are really trying to ask the why questions and make the...
Now we have two technologies there on Mars that are using very particular laser sensors to probe the rocks and to understand whether these rocks trap some organic molecules or some features, either mineral or organic or textural, that give us clues or indication about past or present life on Mars. And so among the whole suite of instruments that you see here, the two that I helped design and build and now, as we speak, operate on Mars are SuperCam. And SuperCam is this box that you see here on the mast with a little yellow lens. That is a telescope, actually, a 3.5-inch telescope that we use to zap rocks at a distance. We are shooting laser up to 10 meters away. That would be, I think, 25 feet, something like that, is my
not as good as it could be. Totally agree. I take a rather different perspective, though. I think, who was it? That, you know, you go to Mars with the program you got. This is the program we've got.
That was Rumsfeld.
Yes, Rummy. Right. You go to Mars with the program you got, and many of us in the trenches in the science world propose instruments and missions that don't get selected. For a variety of reasons, they're judged to be too risky. People have proposed to go to gully kind of landing sites, places where slope streaks and other potential evidence of groundwater. They're extremely difficult, just from an engineering standpoint, to land on. And there's the planetary protection, which that's a real bugaboo, and it annoys a lot of us. So I find myself in agreement with a lot of your perspective, in which you say, I wish we had a better program. I wish we had people on the ground working with robotics. I wish robotics was optimized to do the missions. I wish we could do more of them. I wish we could sample more of the diversity of Mars than the places that we have. The trend is in the right direction, in my opinion. The trend is in the right direction, getting into places like ancient lake beds, which were habitable environments, which are perfectly reasonable places where life could have been if it did exist on Mars.
And that there has been some sort of a cover-up, and I hope someone in Congress gets mad. National sources who've been up to that area and who have flown over Papoose in the last couple of months.
This is in another way.
All right, Linda, before we get to your guest, and I do want to ask...
created, or they hypothesized that these objects were created by indigenously evolved Martians who grew up and evolved on Mars the way we did here on Earth, as a metaphor. He came up with the conclusion that the arrangement of the objects and the regularity of the faces that are visible is very, very hard to explain other than as an architectural complex of some sort. And in my report, I do a quote from a short paper of his on this topic. So he has found architectural symmetry in this group. There's even some drawings in my report on this that show some of the measurements. I'll say the most outstanding one is this. In this group of objects, there's a little arrangement of what appear to be five little hills. They're probably around 100 feet high. And they're arranged like a cross. There are four of them at right angles to each other and then one right in the middle. And this has been called the city square. Around those objects, these large pyramidal shapes look roughly, when you look at them, they look like they're in a sort of a pentagon. Now, Mr. Sirtek made very careful measurements. He checked and rechecked from the apexes, or the tops, the very pointed tops of these pyramidal shapes that surround the city square. And he found that they form an almost perfect pentagon shape with equal angles in the right places for a symmetrical pentagon. This is of significance not only because it is almost impossible that would happen by chance. It would be very difficult to find five mountaintops to measure like that. But also because the large structure to the south of that, called the D&M Pyramid, also appears to have itself a pentagonal shape and is about the same size as the pentagon shape that was found in the city area. So that's part of the architectural analysis, and that's of some interest.
Professor, as you look at the cluster of objects that you have studied on Mars, and then you examine the rest of the surface of Mars, are there other areas where there are anomalies?
Yes.
Very much like this one? In other words, is this a common area or an uncommon area?
So, and the same goes for your flashlights, the same goes for your wipers, think about your car, right? And so now we build on things to last on Mars. But Mars is not like your typical winter-summer cycle. On Mars, we are going in temperature swings that are 100 degrees day-night. Celsius, very cold to not so cold. It is very dry, so you build up a lot of electrostatic charge, a lot of radiation, ultraviolet, and cosmic radiation. So it's a very harsh environment. That's the reason why it takes so long to A, to develop a mission, and B, to get science out of the mission. Which is why, for the first time now, and in the last couple of missions with Curiosity and Perseverance, we're finding the sweet spot of the ability to do science at a distance, science anywhere from 5 to 20, 30, 50 feet, with very close-up science as well, using handheld and close-up type instruments.
The following program is made possible by a grant from the Bigelow Foundation.
Lines in Peru as evidence.
Could be the remains of a flying disc that had crashed on the red planet.
Haas says many believe ancient civilizations, including one called the Cydonians, once thrived on the red planet.
There's been lots of evidence that there are pyramidal structures and all types of mound formations on the planet that do not look normal. One formation in particular, the famous Paratopia Parrot that was taken by NASA, has over 22 points of anatomical correctness, which goes way beyond any natural formation.
In a way, we are really, really speeding up the data production rate, if you want, the science delivery of the mission. And we do this in a very simple way. First, using this MAST cam, which is this box that I showed earlier on the MAST. Literally, it's a MAST. It's a periscope, if you want, but it's moving around 360 up and down. and is able to, in this case of Curiosity, number 47 as well, to really shoot lasers far away. So you get information firsthand on top of your images, and all these images you've seen for the last month, they are going to be very soon complemented with real chemical, hard data of chemistry. What elements do you have there? Sodium, carbon, sulfur, hydrogen, and also molecules. Do you have silicate? Do you have a carbonate? Do you have some of these minerals that Elena was describing as the holy grail, right? As the MVP things that we're looking for here. So we're using first all this remote science, like scouting, if you want, survey tools to really hone in the places that we like. And then once we like it, then we launch a campaign to drive up. Drive up sounds pretty trivial, but I think Elena will show you later that it's not so, and it's pretty scary in many ways. And above everything, it takes forever. It may take up to a week to drive about a football length worth on Mars, and then to deploy your handheld device, your magnifying lens.
Come up here, and we're going to zero in on this trend here. Also notice this trend labeled TFL. All rocks from Earth are on that trend, Moon also. But if you switch now, if you magnify part of that, these are the Mars rocks here, or at least a subset of them. And they're quite distinct from Earth rocks and from other meteorites. So it turns out that Mars has a very distinctive oxygen isotope fingerprint. It is so distinctive that one careful oxygen analysis is enough to certify any rock is from Mars or not. And so that is really the gold standard now for telling Mars meteorites. Microbes that eat into shales and basalt. And you can see etch pits developing on Earth. Another feature of these carbonates is that they have clay minerals. This is smectite, which is a water-containing clay mineral. Now, when people started to study this, they claimed that these things were formed at high temperatures from a melt, and because there was no obvious water involved. And so we and other groups now have found these clay minerals, which do contain water, and which, if you heat, lose their structure. So the presence of these, and sometimes in the very bottom of those pits, indicates that that there was water present when those pits were formed and when the carbonates were formed.
Certainly a good possibility for microbial life on the planet. If we're looking for complex organic molecules, this is an example of that. Right? This is a dense, you see this carbon atoms that's fluid together. This is actually another complex one. The complex one will be on the next slide. This is what we call molecular biomarkers. So those hexagonal kind of structures linked together, this is actually carbon atoms. Okay? So on the left, you can see the names of the microorganisms and diatoms. And each microorganism has a specific set of this complex organic molecules. And those complex organic molecules are very, very stubborn, you know, meaning that the microorganisms can die millions of years ago, but you're still in the rock where that particular microorganism lived, we will still find the molecule. So the cell already is not there, it's destroyed, you know, but we still will see pieces of that, of those organic molecules. And we can tell, back in the past, in this rock, there's this particular microorganism. So this is a much more reasonable strategy for the Mars exploration to look for this particular molecules. Are there any questions to this so far?
No, everyone is just very carefully listening.
of light in the night sky called Mars. The last few hundred years, we've known that it's a planet, a place more or less like our own, a world in its own right. But a detailed knowledge of what Mars is like had to await the mission of Mariner 9, an unmanned spacecraft which went into orbit around the planet Mars in late 1971 and worked for almost a year.
A geologist looks at a planet to first understand the processes that are going on there, the things that are affecting the development of its surface at the present time. But even more important, we try to look back in the past to place the events that have taken place over a long period of time to understand what happened early in its development, in the middle part of its development, the things that are happening now, and to predict what might happen in the future.
For a biologist, one of the great scientific opportunities of our time is the search for life on Mars. That question is so important, it will change our whole concept of life. It will change our whole concept of how life originated. The question is not only whether there is life on Mars, but whether that life has a separate origin from our own life, life as we know it.
But Mariner 9 was placed into an orbit around Mars. It saw a planet one half the size of Earth, blanketed by a gigantic dust storm. For almost 2 months, scientists could see only blurred pictures of the top of the storm, or the ice and snow of the South Pole shining dimly through the dust, and several dark spots, apparently mountain peaks protruding up through the storm. And then the great clouds of dust receded, and the long weeks of frustration ended with one magnificent and exciting word: volcanoes. The photographs bear little witness to the violence in which these volcanic mountains were born. On Earth, the eruption of volcanoes created the atmosphere and produced the water that fills our oceans and rivers. On Mars, the same magic of physics and chemistry created a thin alien atmosphere and provided a source of water on a planet known to be drier than the Sahara.
And where evidence of that life could be preserved. So I think that's a good idea. And while it's true that the Viking-style biology experiments have not been reproduced, have not been reconducted in the time since Viking, I take exception to the points that you made, and you made this morning, Stephen, that there are no experiments that can detect life on Mars. There is an active GCMS mass spectrometer in Curiosity. 36 times now we've taken samples drilled from the subsurface, not a lot of the subsurface, but some, and expose them to that chemistry set, which can detect complex organic molecules. I sit there in anticipation every time when the new result's going to come out, because there could be something spectacular. Who knows, right? Could be something spectacular at pretty low concentrations. Maybe not as good as the Viking experiments, but still. So, I think there are experiments going. I mean, in some sense, we're searching for active life in any picture we take, right? How do we find ancient life on Earth? We're not finding the organisms. They're gone. There are no fossils before, 550 million years ago, right? It was all soft-bodied organisms. What do the Precambrian geologists do here? They go to the very tiny fraction of Earth's surface that's left from 3.x billion years ago in Western Australia, Canada, Greenland, a few other places, right? And they're not looking for biologic organisms. They're looking for subtle chemical and isotopic signatures. They're looking for biosignatures like textures and stromatolitic kind of forms that colonies of biologic organisms had made a long time ago, and they got preserved in the geologic record. That's the evidence for ancient life on the Earth, and it's basically what we're trying to do with the currently active biology and biosignature experiments on Mars.
What Haas believes the Cydonians vanished from Mars millions of years ago after a war that led to nuclear Armageddon. So who could this ship belong to?
For people that believe this UFO crash on Mars is an actual UFO, it may be connected to the Greys that visit our planet. They've been visiting our planet for millennia, and possibly visiting Mars also. Some believe that the Grey aliens crashed at Roswell, and they may have also lost control of one of their vehicles on Mars.
Now, we know people have been seeing alleged signs of civilization on Mars ever since this famous face was discovered in a 1976 photograph taken by Viking 1. Most of these images, including the face, were revealed to be natural geological formations once higher resolution images became available. But what about this? I mean, that clean, circular edge is pretty clear.
So we only do that when we're sure that this particular rock or outcrop or formation is worth the time. So once we select that, again, based on the mast cameras, pictures, and laser sensing now, we will be able to really accurately pick up the exciting targets. And then it's when we drive up, we deploy the arm, so every rover has an arm, that has all these really powerful close-up tools that you can put in contact with your object, with your target, and really do all kinds of imaging, laser scanning right now, X-ray information as well, to really, really understand what the small features, what the local micro-scale texture tells you about what the rock is made of and what it contains. And more importantly, what it was like in the past. So, and now for the first time ever on a mission, we're gonna be able to get a small core, we're gonna be able to drill into the rock, extract a little core a few inches long, and again, for the very first time, we're gonna be able to capture that, seal it hermetically, and store it for eventual return to Earth. So this is the whole way we operate the mission, is we take the whole picture, a big picture look, look around, what's important, drive up, deploy the lenses, and drill and get the samples that we think are the best. And eventually, later this decade, maybe early in the 30s, there will be another mission that will collect those samples.
NASA films made about
a volcanic activity. With volcanoes came their gases, including water vapor. These gases condensed and formed rain. In its beginning, it rained for countless years. The rain cooled the planet's surface. The rain eventually formed streams. These cut channels in the planet as the waters flowed over the terrain. In size. Streams widened. Small streams emptied into larger ones, creating rivers or oceans. This is the past history of Mars as some see it. This is Mars today.
Of a planet. I think for a while there was a wane enthusiasm.
And how did the space community get that enthusiasm back? I mean, it was
I think, I mean, there are a combination of factors. I mean, out of that...
Isn't the universe big enough for the both of us? Wired science writer and Martian expert Jeffrey Marlowe is here to expose.
An amazing experience. Anytime that you have robots at your disposal on the surface of another planet, doing your bidding, doing science, is a good day.
So what recent findings have really encouraged scientists to continue research for life on Mars?
So I think there are two main thrusts of this exciting field. One is what's happening on Mars, the knowledge we're getting of the planet, of the way it used to be. And that's sort of through some of the minerals that we're finding on the surface. These minerals indicate that there was water around, and that's a key aspect of life anywhere. The other aspect is what's been happening on Earth, and the fact that anywhere on the planet that we go, there's liquid water and nutrients, there's life. So the fact that there was water on Mars at one point, and the fact that anywhere on Earth that there's water, there's life, brings these together and possibly set the stage for past or present life on Mars.
It seems like such a slam dunk, but yet we still haven't found definitive proof. Where are we on this timeline? How long do you think it'll take before we either conclusively figure it out or conclusively write it off?
So that's a good question. And I think one of the main factors that hasn't really been brought into this debate is, you know, life needs water, it needs nutrients, it needs protection. But the fourth thing it needs is time. And we know that water was around on the surface of Mars. We don't know how long. And we also don't know how long it took for life to evolve on Earth. So that's something that we really don't have a good sense of, and that's something that curiosity, with its focus on past habitability on Mars, might be able to answer.
Now, going into pop culture a little bit, what's your favorite?
Martian life. Just tell me about why it's up there and why it's landing in the Jezero crater.
Well, it's super exciting. It's...
How good is the evidence for ancient life on Mars based on the Allen Hills meteorite? The evidence comes in two forms. First, evidence for organic material. There are indeed hydrocarbons within the meteorite. They need not represent decayed organisms. There are also magnetite and iron sulfide compounds that are often found in juxtaposition to living organisms who do not directly represent those organisms. Also notable in the photographs of slices of the meteorite were the slender forms that were very reminiscent of microfossils, 10,000 times smaller than a human hair, some 200 nanometers long. These are very evocative of fossils, but they do not necessarily represent living organisms. No cell walls are seen, and there's no direct evidence of amino acids. The jury is definitely still out on whether the Allen Hills meteorite indicated ancient life on Mars. Global Surveyor mission showed some interesting topographic features on Mars. Situations where upland regions dropped onto smooth plains, very reminiscent of the continents on the Earth dropping into the smooth seafloor sediment.
There are different types of molecules. Molecules can be big, organic molecules can be very, very small. So, you know, the one approach is to look for those organic molecules in the rocks, right, as evidence of some past life. The other one is to look at the atmosphere. To look at the atmosphere, so some simple organic molecules, like methane. Methane is the simplest organic molecule.
Hear a lot about it on here because of the global warming, it's a greenhouse gas on Earth.
But what's important is that on Earth, almost all methane, 95%, is done by microbes. It can be done in the spider fields or in the stomach of a cow. But it's done by fermenters, by this small methanogenic bacteria which produces methane. Methane is very small, it escapes in the atmosphere. So if we find methane in the atmosphere, then we think this is a very interesting indicator that maybe there is microorganisms living in the soil and there is methane in the atmosphere. This approach works not only for Mars but also for exoplanets. People who are looking for exoplanets outside our solar system, they don't have the luxury to go to those exoplanets. They can only look at a telescope. So this is what they're looking for. They're looking for biogenic gases like methane. But we can also look for this biogenic gas on Mars as well. So that's another strategy.
No, the researchers have located maybe one to two dozen objects on other areas of Mars. Some of them have been located by searching in areas similar to the Cydonia location, ones that are located right near what would have been the shore of an ancient seabed, etc., trying to infer what kind of areas would such things be built upon. And I'd say there's a dozen or more, anyway, objects that have been identified as suspicious. Most interesting is one called the Crater Pyramid, which is I think 200 miles or so away from the Cydonian area. And it is a very clear-looking four-sided pyramidal shape that is perched on the rim of a crater. It's the highest thing for hundreds of miles around, and doesn't look like it could have been natural, partly because when the meteorite impacted, it apparently caused no damage to this object, which suggests maybe the object was built on it after the crater was made. There's no indication that, for example, the material piled up on the side of it where the crater would have impacted, and that there would be what they call an impact shadow behind the object. So that's a very interesting object. But yes, there are but a few. Most of those are outlined in Mark Carlotto's book called Martian Objects.
Well, it's probably called for conjecture, but I'm interested. Would you think? Which of these two probabilities do you think more likely?
An exoplanetary
of some sort that was thrived at one point apparently on Mars did this, or that somebody from someplace else did it as to leave some sort of message, or I'm fumbling here, but I think you understand.
Oh, Art, you just outlined the two major theories on the subject.
The once powerful volcanoes of Mars appear to be extinct or dormant today. Time and erosion have covered their once molten lava with a mantle of dust. Yet volcanoes are still present, and larger than any on Earth. Olympus Mons is the largest known volcano in the solar system. It is three times higher than Mount Everest. Mars also has a system of canyons. It is three times higher than Mount Everest. Yet volcanoes are still present, and larger than any on Earth. Olympus Mons is the largest known volcano in the solar system. It is three times higher than Mount Everest. These canyons might be 150 miles wide. They may extend over a distance of 2,000 miles. What forces could have formed these canyons, and when?
Days, and that was the entire mission. We've already had 90 days, and it's only been driving around, testing instruments. So it's a much longer scope of the mission. Eventually, the goal is to drive up to Mount Sharp, and that's where these beautiful rock layers are deposited. And right now, it's kind of beginning to start that long drive to the south, towards the mountain.
It's taking the scenic route.
It is. And
Some of these features were old, and some of the riverbeds too. Craters superimposed indicated that they must be a billion years or more old. Did Mars have seas and lakes a billion or more years ago? And if so, how could that be? There's growing evidence that Mars was warmer and wetter in the past. Increased volcanic activity early in Mars history and geothermal activity may have led to an atmosphere that was about 30% the pressure of Earth's atmosphere, rather than less than a percent as seen now. This large amount of geological activity could also have heated and melted water and caused it to run on the surface and accumulate into seas and lakes.
Explores all of Mars and reveals a planet beyond speculation. The intricate spacecraft, operating at a distance of over 100 million miles, is commanded by a complex system of men and machines on Earth. Six mission experiments yield results that can be woven into a total picture of a planet. As the spacecraft orbits Mars, the density of the atmosphere is measured by radio waves as they pass through the atmosphere on their way to Earth. The thin Martian clouds are scanned in the infrared to determine if they are carbon dioxide or water. An infrared instrument continually measures the changes in surface temperatures, ranging from minus 150 degrees Fahrenheit on the night side to as high as 70 degrees at noon on the equator. The height of mountains, the depth of canyons, and the gases in the Martian atmosphere are measured by invisible radiation in the ultraviolet and infrared wavelengths. Analysis of subtle changes in the orbit of Mariner reveals that Mars has an odd bulging shape, and this shape is a new clue to its internal structure. Two television cameras photograph and map the surface of Mars. In nearly a year of operation, they transmit more than 7,000 photographs. Of these, over 1,500 are specifically taken to ensure that the entire Martian surface will be mapped. The photographs are carefully matched, precisely positioned on a globe, and skillfully fitted together. This shadow on the surface of Mars is cast by one of its two moons, Phobos, only about 13 miles long. The second moon, Deimos, is even smaller. They are the darkest objects ever photographed in space. Primitive chunks of rock battered by meteoroids, their origin is unknown. This is the face of Mars photographed by earlier mariners. Here, a visitor might think he was on our moon, that this planet, too, was unchanging and dead. But transported to the other face of Mars revealed by Mariner 9, he would see fresh evidence of a living, changing planet. The old craters here have been long since covered by immense flows of lava. Thin white clouds form and drift across the dark blue sky. In the distance, he would see the long, gentle slope of a great volcano. Intense small dust storms scour canyon walls into sharp ribs of ancient rock. Near the poles, he would see a great series of ancient terraces, each layer composed of a mixture of dust and snow deposited by the wind. Each took thousands of years to form. Each is an episode in the history of the planet.
The exciting thing that we discovered, there were many of them, but one very exciting thing that we observed in the middle of the mission was that things were changing before our very eyes on the Martian surface. For example, in 13 days, an area of about 7 miles across, discontinuously appeared, just hadn't been there before, suddenly it was there. Now that kind of change had been observed, but from the Earth and on a larger scale, for 100 years. It was called seasonal changes, and the early observers imagined that there was plant life on Mars, and that in local spring and summer the plants grew, they darkened the landscape and heightened the coloration of the landscape.
Without direct missions to approach Mars and then to sample its soil and hopefully return it, we will never be sure of the entire history of the Martian climate.
Did it disappear? And what removed it? The water that may still exist on Mars is probably located in part at the poles, existing as polar ice or frost. It is joined there by frozen carbon dioxide in temperatures of minus 190 degrees Fahrenheit. This is the coldest place on the surface of Mars. In the ice caps, and although it may exist in the crust as permafrost, there is relatively little water on Mars. Mostly, this is a planet covered with dust, and the dust is moved by winds. Usually, the Martian dust storms last only a few days, but they carry dust up to speeds of 250 to 300 miles per hour. Dust storms have apparently contributed to much of the erosion that has taken place on Mars. The dust storms have helped shape mountains, volcanoes, and other surface features. At times, the dust has even appeared to have formed dunes. Without Earth-like features, although portions of its surface are pitted with impact craters.
Mars is cold and dry, a frozen desert. Temperature ranges from about minus 120 degrees Fahrenheit or 190 Kelvin up to about minus 20 degrees Fahrenheit or 240 Kelvin. On a summer afternoon in Mars, the soil can be warmer, even a little above the freezing point of water, because the soil directly absorbs the sun's radiation. The atmosphere is very thin, made primarily of carbon dioxide, 95%, with a surface pressure of about 0.7% of the pressure of the Earth's atmosphere at sea level. What will it take to convincingly demonstrate the existence of life on Mars?
Could we be doing more? Yeah. Could we be doing better? Sure. But I'm still super excited and delighted every time we present a sample to the GCMS on Curiosity. Every time we put the Sherlock instrument, which can detect through Raman and fluorescence and other methods, can detect complex organic molecules, and we found the meteoritic population you guys are talking about. So that's exciting to me, and I think it's worth celebrating. Let's build on it. Let's make it better. And then the final point I want to make has to do with, you know, what we should expect. There's no ozone layer. Hard UV is coming right to the surface. If there is extant life on Mars, and I totally, totally believe there could be, especially if there's a water table, which we don't know much about. There's an ice table, for certain, on the subsurface. But if there's extant life there, it's got to get below that UV. And it's got to get not just below the UV and the surface layer, but that surface has been churned by impacts for billions of years. There's nowhere like that on the Earth that's had that kind of churning kind of exposure to the UV over most of its geologic history. And there is an oxidant, right? The perchlorate is there. The InSight mission found it. It's a strong oxidant, and that and the UV are making it exceedingly difficult for complex organic molecules like the ones we'd love to find to be detected at the surface.
Vincent DiPietro, Gregory Molinar, and John Brandenburg have come forward with what they call the Sidonia hypothesis. And it is the hypothesis that by the way, I should say that there is a cover in the object in the city area. They're mostly interested in the fate. But they believe that these objects were created, or they hypothesized.
theorize that these objects were created by indigenously evolved Martians who grew up and evolved on Mars the way we did here on Earth, and that they did look like human beings, which is why the face is humanoid, and that they then passed away. Now that requires them to in the past for this show.
Yes, indeed.
Now, I talked earlier about the cracks. I want to talk a little bit more about the cracks. Many of these meteorites have cracks in them. How do we know that those cracks formed on Mars and not the Earth? Well, because this is a fusion crust. When a meteorite goes through the atmosphere, it heats. It gets very hot on the outside only. In half a millimeter or so, it stays cold, but the outside heats up. So what happens if there's a crack here and there's something in that crack, such as clay minerals, that crack heats up, the clay minerals decompose, they bubble, and they get sealed off by this now glassy fusion crust. So as soon as you see a crack being intersected by this fusion crust, you're absolutely certain that crack was there already. That crack is formed on Mars. Here's an example of some cracks in one of these meteorites, Nakba, which is from Egypt. And these cracks are filling up with secondary material, which consists of clay minerals and carbonates and some amorphous silica. In places, they're long, narrow pits which have been carved into the olivine in this case, and then these pits are filled with various secondary minerals. Well, what's going on here? This is some kind of weathering by water at low temperature, relatively low temperatures. We don't know that biology is involved, but we do know that this is a low temperature aqueous process. Notice how jagged some of these get to be. Well, people on Earth have studied similar features in basaltic glass from the ocean floor, and they see that there's jagged intrusions into the glass from cracks. Well, it turns out in this case, these people have shown that these are caused by microbes. They have found DNA in these little tunnels that have burrowed into the glass. Now, we're not